Hi there, you guys. Welcome to part two of the mental pillar. This is part of the larger training of temple body. And so that's just wire straight on in there. So to kind of recap over part one a little bit, we talked about the lower mind and how the lower mind can isolate a person, and we're too in the lower mind, or a person is dealing with other people that are in the lower mind, the lower will tend to isolate, and it will always attempt to dominate. It will try to squash the opponent, or the opponent will probably puff up their lower mind to meet it. So if you meet someone who's in their lower mind, quite often it'll trigger you to go into your lower mind too, and that's certainly the case for me. All the energy at this point will go into this really pointless, exhausting outing to the lower mental plane. Nothing is gained, nothing is achieved. Everyone's exhausted or bamboozled or confused in the presence of this. This is a good indicator of how the mental pillar is functioning for a huge swathe of the collective at the moment. All the energy going to an outing to the lower mental plane. So, yeah, I quite like that. That's pretty good. We overwork, or we drop into the lower mind to no avail, really. It doesn't really achieve much. And then we're left with little energy left to access or use our highest thought, or the highest stream of universal consciousness that we've all. There's so many different streams that we can tap into, but we've got no energy left for this because we're stuck in the lower mind a lot of the time. The thing is, you guys, the mind and the upper chakras are capable of receiving or funneling information from higher realities. It's like we digest information through the upper chakras and the mind in the same way that the stomach digests food. So we can train the mind to stay really open and receptive, and it can merge with streams of information and bring through insights through your higher self, which will feel like psychic insights. You just kind of know stuff. But we can't do this if we're stuck in the lower mind. And this process is a natural process. We'll all go through this eventually. You know, maybe in this lifetime, maybe the next, maybe in a few, but we all will eventually get there. But in order to do this, we have to learn to discipline the lower mind. And we need to work with a heart for this, because we can feel there's a vibration where we feel when we're in our lower self or our higher self. So again, it's one pillar, you know, has to feed the other. That which comes from fear rather than love takes us into our sort of own personal negative spirals, or starts us thinking in circles. I think if I'm thinking in circles, you know, I need to get out of my head for a bit and do something else, go and work with myself physically, or you know, connect with my heart, go for a walk, connect with nature. An engorged lower mind prevents the process of accessing universal ideas. You can't access universal ideas when your lower mind is too full, because the lower mind will take all the energy from you analyzing and quantifying, you know, everything. It's too busy. So you're too busy to enter into oneness with any higher stream. There's too much. It's like grasping rather than releasing and relaxing. And within higher streams of information, I've talked about this, like the ascended masters sending their consciousness. There's lots of different, you know, streams of information that we can hook into. Within all these higher streams of information, time and distance just don't exist. This is how, like, distance healings and readings can become possible, because you're tapping into a stream of information. And this can also happen through timelines. This is how a psychic can look into the past or future self, because everything becomes non-local, because energetic fields and information streams can be easily reached by our consciousness, but not when we're in the lower mind. So we have to learn the discipline, the mental discipline, of what I've been talking about so far. So it's like the higher mind is actually a doorway into sort of timelessness and into infinite space. So we can see, you know, like the lower and the higher. But I want to be clear about this sort of high and low thing. We don't want to judge this too harshly. Because the thing is, if I'm saying to someone, you're stuck in your lower mind, that probably means I'm in my lower mind. because I'm stuck, because I'm judging. So it's a real strange one, really. It's really strange. Again, it's not an exact science. Because if we're judging someone else, we're probably in the lower mind. So if you've got a teacher who judges someone who's stuck in thought spirals and thinks that they are superior, if that teacher thinks they're superior, they're actually functioning from the lower mind. So look out for this loop, lovelies, because you get this a lot in spiritual circles. Like people get stuck into a way of thinking where they think they're thinking from their higher mind and they're just not. And this is where the heart comes in. You know, you discern through your heart. How do you discern this? You feel the resonance of it. So good and bad is not higher and lower. High and low is not good and bad. There is no good and bad, really. If someone's not, it's like my teacher would say, if someone does a bad thing, they're not bad, they're just not there. You know, they've not evolved enough to stay out of the low vibration. They're being pulled there. And this is why it feels bad, because it's low. So as we align with the higher mental plane, it's not that it's bad, it's just low. So it's got so much density in it. It's slow and feels claggy and icky and ugh. But when we align with the higher mental plane, it feels good. So we can feel this inside of ourselves. Sorry, I feel like I'm talking too quickly and I've got a cold. So hopefully you can catch my words. But when we're in the higher mental plane, usually, you know, we're not. It's like I said to you, when I'm channeling, I'm in my higher mind. I just don't have those same thoughts of like doubt and insecurity, and you know, I don't question things. There's a flow. It's easy. It's easy, and it feels good, and it feels spacious and exciting, and there's a lot of energy there. When we're in the lower mind, it doesn't feel as good because there's more density. It's like the difference between trying to swim in water and trying to swim in mud, I suppose. So, you know, we've got to be careful that we don't fall into judgment. Blame and shame blame and shame really show us that we're functioning from the lower mind. So it's a really nice thing to say, you know, they're not bad, they're just not there yet. You know, you are not bad, you're just not there yet. Or I am not bad, I'm just not there yet. We've got to stop this. This is the lower mental plane that judges. The higher mental plane creates and releases. It's not so attached. So reducing things to good and bad is a function of the lower mind. And we, all of us, I talk about all of this stuff, you guys, but don't ever be under the illusion that I've mastered any of this. I'm just good at talking about it because I make so many mistakes, and I'm this is the work that I'm doing, so it's easy to talk about. So all of us tend to fall into the vibration of the lower mind from time to time. The great news is, if we start to notice that we're doing this, we can know that we're clearing that patterning. It's because it's becoming conscious. So we're going into that sun energy of the conscious mind. So give yourself a break, you guys. You know, if you notice yourself going into, I still fall into blame and shame. I still fall into, you know, all these patterns that I'm talking about. And, you know, it takes lifetimes to dissolve this. It takes lifetimes to get there. Because on the face of it, you guys, you know, when we're working with a mental body, we are all a bit mental. And that's just how it is. So let's go back to the mental plane. When we reduce everything down to just the mind, It's a sign that your mental plane is out of balance. It's dominating. Remember what I said about the pillars? The four pillars, mental, emotional, spiritual, physical, and how overloaded the mental pillar is. Yeah, it's completely overloaded. So, you know, when we start to reduce everything down to the mind, we know that it's out of balance because there's more to every human and ourselves than just mind. There's an intelligence that runs through the physical body, the emotional and the spiritual body too. So it's like when we're out of balance or there's an imbalance in our mental plane, we can't handle the inconvenience of the emotional body. So first of all, you want to remove emotion. So sometimes if we're trying to connect emotionally and we're struggling, we might want to look at the mind. Sometimes it's not that a person is emotionally distant, but rather mentally dominant. The mental plane is overriding the emotional plane over and over and over again. So this is why I wanted to bring this training through, because I could, like I said in the example of the car like driving into me and me thinking it was a mental problem, it was a physical problem. I was not really there on my physical pillar. So we can see how useful it is that we look to all pillars. And as I'm writing this training, you know, I'm learning more and more about the interplay of the four bodies or the pillars of each of us, how one always affects the other. And it's really interesting to me how the mind can blame the other pillars or completely avoid them, and how an excess of like emotion can also overpower the mind. How, you know, or an excess of mental energy can overpower the emotions. So we're in a task with these four pillars of continual balancing, the masculine, the feminine, the sun and the moon, bringing, you know, equal measure, equal to. One is not better than the other. They are equal to. So we're trying to just balance through the mental, through the pillars of the self, balancing ourselves. And I speak to this because the mental pillar is so overloaded. It's just so big generally in for most people. You see, material life lures us into the mental and the physical plane. And if we stay too long there, we can't raise ourselves up to the spiritual or really feel the emotional plane. So at the time of writing this, humanity is really working through the mental plane, because we've become to a certain extent stuck in the mental plane. Like we've got this giant mental plane, we're like giant heads. And, you know, if we allow the mental plane to take us too far from our organic nature, too far from the physical, emotional or spiritual aspects of the self, and we keep turning to technology and away from ourselves, or we stick with that savior complex that I was talking about, you know, I'm waiting for someone else to make this better for me. Perhaps, you know, eventually we will evolve into something that looks like an alien being, you know, because we've got these huge heads. Perhaps that archetypal grey alien is us in a future timeline somewhere. And as I was writing this, I actually did tune into something that someone was actually talking about this. So there's other people out there talking about this idea that we're looking at future timelines. So, geez, is that a good incentive to come back to balance? I mean, you know, we live in this place. There's so much beauty. The earth plane is so beautiful. It's so loving. It's got such a unique vibration. It's like... it's like if you're talking about different planes of existence, and you even some of the higher planes don't have that same vibration as love as the earth plane has. So you could, if you do all of this work and eventually start going into different planes, you know, like I'm thinking the sort of more galactic sort of plane anyway, it's not so heart-based. Because their heart-based nature comes from the nature of the earth, nature of Gaia. And it's so beautiful. It's so beautiful that we have to learn how to hold on to that and how to stick with that and ascend with that as a whole. So, yeah, you know... it's a good incentive to come back to balance. We think, you know, we want to stay with that beautiful heart-based earth self. And one of the things that's taking us away from that is the mental body, the lower mental body being out of balance. So at worst, you guys, the mental body creates distortions around control. It dominates. At best, the higher mental body is liberating. It's a liberating force, not just for the individual, but for the collective, for everyone. So we know when we're in the lower mental body, when there's this feeling of like liberation for the individuals, but not everyone. and I've certainly felt that around this COVID thing, you know, a lot of people being left along the sidelines, on, you know, in all directions. Yeah, which means there's definitely a lower mental plane energy there. That's how I would read into it. So let's repeat that. That's important. At worst, the lower mental body creates distortions around control. It dominates. At best, the higher mental body is liberating. The higher mind is a liberating force for everyone. 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 Because it's working with the whole. So, you know, I love this. I love how we bow to one another and we widen the mind. This is practiced in many spiritual traditions and cultures. When you see, say, at the end of a yoga class, you put your hands together, you're connecting your heart and you're connecting to the other person, you say namaste and you bow your head. What you're actually doing there is you're making room inside your mind for the other person. You're making space inside your own mental body for the other person. And this is one of the first disciplines we need to teach our mental plane, to make space for the other person. Like if we shut down to them, we are shut down to everything. We're in the lower mind. To say that again, if we shut down to them, we shut down to everything. We are in the lower mind. You know, some people take up a lot of space. They do. But the higher mind, when we're in our highest mind, the higher mind can accommodate this without being victimized or dominated by them. The higher mind can see a giant head coming a mile off, but the higher mind stays elevated in a situation and does not allow itself to be pulled into lower frequencies. Instead, it gently invites space and invites the other to join them in that spacious place. And this is where we're headed. But you guys, it might take quite a bit of time and effort for us to get there. In order to get there, the mental plane, the lower mental plane needs discipline. It's like a wild horse. It needs reining in. It needs training. And the best way to like train the lower mind is through repetition. Because repetition pulls the mind back to one thing. After far too much dissecting, separating and quantifying, we rein the mind into one thing. Think about this, you guys. When we rein the mind in, it doesn't reign over us. So for me, mantra really quiets my mind. It pulls me back to one thing. The yogis talk about bhakti yoga, yoga of the heart, as the easiest way to be liberated, because chanting and mantra shift the patterns of the mind. It draws us in a way away from the mind and into the mantra, into a higher ancient vibration. So one thing instead of many things. There's one, like it's like a mantra is like one word where we can all meet. But there's like tons of things that we can use, different techniques we can use to still the mind. There's lots of breathing techniques, or we can run, we can swim, we can practice yoga. We can work with the other pillars, really. I mean, you can see this as I'm talking about the mental pillar being overloaded when I'm working with the mantra. I'm working with the emotional pillar, so I'm pulling some energy out of the mental pillar into the emotional pillar. If I'm doing yoga or swimming, I'm working with a physical pillar, so I'm pulling some of my energy back into that, away from the mind, to one thing. It's interesting. Our thinking can take us backwards or forwards. It can be really logical, or it can be really abstract. You know, to bring the mind back to center, what we have to do is you have to observe you. One thing. And like when we drop into observing the self, a really strange thing starts to happen. Eventually, we ask, who is that that's observing me? What is that that's observing me? And you could perhaps answer here the higher mind or the universal field. So we can see how meditation and self-work takes us out of smaller thoughts and into the bigger pictures. But meditation will generally work with one thing at a time. One thing. One thing. You know, two things, or duality, exist on the mental plane for sure. Things are broken apart for analysis and then put back together. And this is super useful. This is what we're supposed to be doing through our mind space. But, you know, if we leave that unchecked, it becomes like crazy, pointless and exhausting, you know. I watched a thing on YouTube. It was Sadhguru, and he said if your legs keep walking when you're in a chair, you would say the legs are mad. Yet the mind keeps turning over and over and over, and we regard that as normal. We have to learn to check the mind and pull it back. Pull it back to one thing, rein it in so it's not raining over us. Rein in that lower mind. You know, the mind is so powerful, it allows us access to time travel right here. So you can be future thinking, you can be past dwelling, you can be in the shower thinking about work, or you can be at work thinking about going to the dentist. You can have one foot in so many places. And this is where the mental plane can make us feel completely ungrounded. You know, it affects the physical body because so much is pulling on us in so many different directions. So we need to come back to one thing right now, and that's the mental discipline. It doesn't matter what we choose to do, what the one thing is, but that helps it helps the mind, because the nature of the mind is it's an individual. It's an individuated thing that wants to rejoin the whole without surrendering that individuated thing. Whew, Serapis Bay, please come in and help me out with this, okay? Because I'm doing, you know, it loops back on itself. It's confusing and beautiful, but yeah. I love Kung Fu Panda. There you go, that's that, back to earth. Here we come. There's a little scene in Kung Fu Panda when they've got the master Shifu, who's like this turtle, and he comes in and he says to the panda, Yesterday is history, tomorrow is a mystery, but today is a gift, and that's why it's called the present. Yesterday is history, tomorrow is a mystery, but today is a gift, and that's why it's called the present. And if we can train the mind to be here in the now to one thing, it's like we open up the gift that we are. We become more receptive. Training the mind to one thing, even if it's just the breath, mantra, even if it's just your feet on the earth, helps you to become receptive in your mind, helps you to tap into that higher mind and see things differently. I think it was Einstein or some scientist, my husband's more into this than me, said that they used to just go to sleep or go for a walk when they had a problem, and they'd wake up and they'd just be inspired to solve it. And that's a good illustration of tapping into the higher mind. Okay, so one thing I want to be, I just want to touch on is, I don't know if I touched upon this in the dragon training. I'm sorry if I did, but I feel quite passionate about this too. I want to talk about positive thinking. Positive thinking, you guys, is just the mind trying to dominate the emotional body again. You know, we think how we feel. Positive thinking doesn't work. It's programming. It's programming. We can be faced with this when we're faced with a positive thinker or like an affirmation junkie. There's a kind of inauthenticity that resonates from this person. And it comes out from this ludicrous practice of, I mean, I'm all for optimism, but positive thinking and too much affirmation. Affirmation's okay in small doses, but, you know, just to plant little seeds. But we don't want to program ourselves to become, to move away from our truth. And sometimes our truth isn't all that pretty, you know. We can't think positively purely through the mental plane. We need to incorporate emotion. And actually, it's reverse. The emotion actually incorporates the thought, because the emotion, if we're thinking positive, we might have a feeling of joy in our hearts, and that incorporates a thought that is positive, that sees the best in someone else. So, you know, we think how we feel, and this is how the mental and emotional bodies work together again, is that, you know, mental and the mental and emotional pillars balance each other out. Like I said, masculine, feminine, sun and moon. Another example of like patriarchal dominance is the dominance of the mental plane and the suppression of the emotion. But as we bring the emotions into balance, the thoughts start to balance too. So again, I'm speaking to like the mental plane, how we have to kind of take the emphasis off the mental plane and work with the emotional pillar or the emotional plane, sometimes to heal the mental plane. You know, thoughts cycle around inside of us because of how we feel. So we give thought energy and not enough gentle discipline to reposition ourselves objectively and subjectively and ask, how do I actually feel? What is initiating this thought form or this process of thinking? This is where I've really seen like the whole thing about with the COVID is like fear, 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 fear. They're just putting out fear onto us, and that's going to influence our thoughts, because we can't reposition ourselves objectively. We can't be objective. Really, what we actually need in a crisis situation is the ability to see the emotion for what it is, and then sort of like hold that in the mind space and hold it steady in the mind space. What I've seen with this whole COVID scenario is the mind space feeding it and expanding it, and how much distortion that has created for people. And I'm just ranting now. Yeah. So it's like, if when we look at thoughts objectively, it's not the thoughts that are the problem, it's our attachments to them. They're like the emotions, they can hijack us, they can kidnap us even, and we can feel it is impossible to rest. But if we look at the thoughts objectively in the same way we look at the emotions, which, that observer consciousness, which is more the spiritual body, we cease to be subject to them. They no longer rule over us. We've reined them in. And this is the principle of most forms of meditation, observational or witness consciousness, detached looking. I am thinking, I am feeling. And this principle works with the mental and the emotional body. It's impossible to really observe ourselves when we're in fear. Well, it's not impossible, but it's much more difficult. And it's really, it's like I say, the fear will feed the thought. So we have to be really, really aware of how these two planes interact with each other. I am thinking, I am feeling, I am thinking this, I am feeling this. This principle works with the emotional body too. Observing yourself thinking actually pulls us out of cycles of thought. And we cease to give them energy because we're observing it. So the cycles eventually stop spinning and the mind becomes quiet. And through this gentle discipline, we can reposition ourselves and untangle ourselves from the whirlwind of the mind So in meditation, I'm saying to the thoughts, not right now. And I'm bringing my awareness back to me, back to one thing. And how do we get still? How do we contemplate something when there's so many things going on? So many opinions. There's so much news. There's so much reporting. There's so much division. There's so much emotion. It's really important, you guys, that we recognize intelligence is happening through all planes, through all pillars of a person, not just through the mind, through the heart, through the body, and through the spirit and the soul. You know, there's such a thing, there's mental intelligence, there's emotional intelligence, there's physical intelligence, there's spiritual intelligence. Now, if you're talking about mental intelligence, the higher mental intelligence, you see temple mental intelligence displaying itself in the sharing of intelligence, not the owning of it. Service is intelligent as it works for the whole. Sharing is evolved. Sharing your intelligence doesn't come through how many books you've read or how many qualifications you've gained. It comes through sharing your own unique energetic signature with people, plants, animals, and planets and the air around you, with existence, actually. So you feed that intelligence that you are into the whole, and you exist, you assist in its healing and evolution. We want to share our intelligence, not own it. We don't own intelligence. And that's where opinions get really, they really scare me. Because it's the owning of intelligence. And the intelligence that we want to share is our own unique energetic signature. So to do that, we can't just join a group. We can't just take on someone else's intelligence and pretend that it's ours. So we can see how tangled up the mental body can become, because we all kind of do all of this stuff. And how we've got to somehow untangle ourselves from it. I said this in the last section, I believe, the emotional pillar, about the Swami saying to me, yoga helps us to sing a happy song. This is all about vibrational intelligence, or sharing your unique energetic signature. You know, silence or chanting, you know, they remedy and soothe the mental plane. Because we need to be able to access a collective consciousness. We need to be able to access the wholeness and oneness to balance out the mind's obsession with analysis and breaking things apart. So mantras help us to do that. They help us to release through the emotional body and reroute ourselves mentally, releasing tension in both. And as I'm saying this, I realize we also need to be able to access our own individuated consciousness so that we can share that unique intelligence with the whole. So we need to be both connected but also separate, both at the same time. This is the conundrum of the mental body. So yeah, I really like a guy that chants a lot. His name is Krishna Das, and I did like a course with him, and he said emotional suffering got him into the practice of mantra, and the mantras helped him to transcend the suffering and took him into heightened states and ways of thinking as his mind adjusted to the frequency of the mantra. I'm paraphrasing there, but his mind was adjusting to the frequency of the mantra, and he was releasing the emotional suffering that he felt. He was transcending it. And, you know, this is how We tap into the higher mind. We tap into something that is whole, not separate, not frightening, not scary, but beautiful, whole and inclusive and caring and loving. Follow one thing. That's how we get the mind there. Follow one thing, breath, mantra, whatever it is, shrink it down to one thing. The mind wants to integrate its individuality. It recognizes itself as one thing. It wants to be of service to the whole, but it still recognizes itself as one thing. And this is why group thinking can lead to mental confusion and suppression and repression of minds and pain, you know, painful situations. So through courses like this and learning about observing and working directly with the self, we learn about the possibility of working through and understanding the old negative thought patterns and the memories that don't serve us, rather than just avoiding them. Through this, you guys, stay with me, I know I'm going on a bit, but through this we can start filtering out the old belief systems and the instinctive knee-jerk patterns that have kept us stuck. And our instinctual consciousness breaks down as we evolve and become less animalistic and more humanitarian. So in other words, we start to shift up a gear from the lower mind to the higher mind through just our pure awareness of working with the self. And we can't do this by having awareness of the external world. It's too many things. We need to take it down to one thing. And so this is why we do the self-work as individuals first. One thing. Okay. So it's important to see our thoughts and to work with them. This is why I hate positive thinking and too much affirmation. It's like a superficial veneer, not a solution. It's sickly, it's not nice. We only start to feel truly optimistic and positive when we understand the idea of moving through the difficulty or the darkness to access more ease or enlightenment. In order, we turn the light on where it is dark. But it has to be dark enough first to warrant it. So for most like real spiritual pilgrims, it's suffering that starts us on this quest. It's difficulty that starts us on this quest, because it has to get pretty dark for us to want to turn the light on. And that's the thing. No one can turn that light on for us. That's why we need this mental pillar to be individuated and to look at the self and to be able to break things down and put them back together again as a tool. But what we've gone wrong is we've become too external and we've been too overloaded in that way. Okay, so everything is held here in physical form. So the mind affects everything. There is a power in the mind. So we can work with it. And the mind has three layers. We have the conscious mind that is saying stuff like, I'm aware of myself. I'm aware of how my mind works. I'm aware of what I'm doing. Through this awareness, I'm gaining awareness to my subconscious mind. I'm aware of my hidden patterns. I'm aware of my subtle self. Particularly, I'm aware of how my emotions run through me. That it's showing me what, you know, their triggers. They're showing me where the wounding is. And through the conscious awareness and the subconscious awareness, I'm traveling inside of myself, watching, observing. Through this awareness, I see the bigger pictures. I see the fractal patterns inside of myself that are a microcosm of a greater universal law and consciousness. And so I gain access to that. So I see the patterns inside myself that look the same as the patterns outside of me. And that means I gain access through myself to everything outside of me. And that's the superconscious. That's where you start to access those higher streams of energy, because you've earned it. And the higher streams of energy that relate and feed into the whole, that you can hop on to help you out and help you see things differently and show you a bigger picture. You know, and this is how spirit works. So it's like working on the self through the conscious and the subconscious, the male and female, the sun and the moon. We start to access everything through our physicality, through our mind, through our emotions, and through our spirit force. So again, I'm harping on about working with the self. And what does the mental body, back to the mental pillar, need to help it to integrate with the whole? Slow, repetitive movement, regular practice, rein it into one thing, keep it present. Make the incredible capacity of the mental body a blessing for you and not a curse. One thing right now, the present, the gift of the mind. The gift of the mind functions best in the moment, in the present moment. Okay, how are we doing for time? Whoa, it's a long one again. Okay, so shall we carry on and just see how much more there is? I think I'll stop there and we'll do another recording. Okay, so thank you for listening. Go and get a cup of tea. I'll go blow my nose and I will see you in part 3. All my love. Bye-bye.